I don't know about you, but what a tremendous sense for me of Jesus in our worship this morning, pointing us to the source of all love. And I pray that as I speak, that we don't lose that sense. So often we compartmentalise our services, don't we? And we've got to do this bit then and that bit then. But really, it should all just be one flowing, one river of praise to God. So I do hope and pray that what I have to say won't take away from that, but hopefully will add to it. We're going to look in detail at the first of our series that Darren introduced last week, taking Mark 12 verse 30 as an anchor point. If you can't remember what that is, don't worry, I'm going to read it to you in a little while. But before we do that, I just wondered, if I gave you all a minute to talk about the things that really were important to you, that motivated you, that made you tick, I wonder what you'd say. Just take a second now to think about some of the things that drive you, some of the things that are behind the things that you do and say, and imagine, if you will, a little ball of energy, or maybe a big ball of energy, that's the essential you that's inside you. What would you, if you could come up here now and just have 1 minute to say and tell everybody what those things were, what would you say? I'm not going to ask you, Sean, okay? But just think about it. If you probably find that easy to do, I hope you do, because all of us are motivated by something. As you do so, it would be, it's just a sense of the essential me that you could speak. For instance, if as you thought about it, if I threw out the two words Manchester United, some of you would go, yes, yes. Some of you would go, no, no. And most of you would go, like my daughter, yeah. If I threw out the words Boris Johnson, there you go, there's a reaction. let's not go too far down that road. but, you know, for me, and I will go this far, integrity and leadership is absolutely essential. And as I look at that particular person, I don't see much of it. And that makes me cross. But that's one of the things that drives me. That's one of the things that is me. And as you think about that, just listen to Mark 12, verse 30, that Darren preached on last week. And maybe fit what you've been thinking about into one of these categories. The verse is, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. Where does that essential you fit in those categories? Now, I've got a feeling that if you know what the right answer is, you'll answer it without hesitation. But if you think about it for a second, you might feel that actually it's impossible to fit the essential me into any one of those categories, because I take bits out of all four of them. The heart, the soul, the mind, the strength, they all contribute to who I am. But the Bible gives us a word that sums up that ball of energy that's inside all of us, that drives all of us, that motivates all of us, as the heart. It's the biblical word for the center of a person. These days, the heart, you know, we use the word the heart, and I guess it probably derives some long way back from the biblical use. But these days, in popular usage, the heart is more to do with emotion. It's particularly to do with love, isn't it? It's particularly to do with Valentine's Day. You'll get cards with hearts on and Cupid's arrows shot through and all those different things. But the biblical word for heart, the biblical meaning of the word heart, is bigger than that. As I was thinking about that, I don't know why, but the words, "I lost my heart to a starship trooper," came up. I wasn't that old when that was on, I must say. It was interesting because I don't know why, I think I do know why that caught my eye. I think it was more hot gossip than the actual words of the song. But in a sense, that was my own heart developing, thinking, oh, that's interesting. We probably won't go any further down that line either. I was only about 8, honest, something. But the biblical word for heart is bigger than the word outside of a Bible usage. And I think it's quite clever, in a sense, that God has created one word, given us one word for the essential me, for the essential who I am, the thing that drives me. If he puts his finger and says, "your heart," that's what he means. And even in church, we can begin to use the word heart sort of a bit glibly. But it's good to remind ourselves of what exactly our heart is, because our heart matters to every single one of us and drives the things we do and the things that we don't do. Sometimes my wife will say to me, "You're not listening to me, are you?" The truth is, it's my heart's probably not in the thing that she's telling me. I must say, the same is true the other way around. I'm just going to throw that in there quickly. I know I'm going to get into trouble for that, but the Bible also says that everything else that we do, our thoughts, our intentions, our feelings, are driven by what's deep down in our heart. It's almost like the center of us is the essential us, but it radiates out to everything else that we do and say. And just to put a few scriptures around that, just to help us to hang a few things off that. Let's start with Genesis 1:26, where the Bible tells us that we are created in the image of God, which is tremendous news, I think. There are so many applications for what it means for us to be made in the image of God, and there's not time to even begin to talk about that. But I think that one of those things is that essential bore of me reflects somehow God. I guess maybe it reflects the Trinitarian nature of God. I've got some Bristol Baptist College words just beginning to creep into my sermons. but God is an essential ball of energy, if I can put it that way without being irreverent. That threefold dialogue that's continually happening within God has somehow also been transferred to us, although we're one on our own, if we stay on our own. But I think that's good news, that essentially it means to us that me somehow reflects God. The bad news, of course, is it didn't stay that way. Genesis 8, verse 21 is God talking about the state of the world just before the flood. And he says there, this is God speaking, "every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood." That's quite a solemn, it's quite a solemn sentence to pass. And we know that was a passing of a sentence, because the flood came and wiped out almost all life on earth. The only life that it didn't was somebody whose heart was right before God. I don't know where you are this morning. You may be in a place where you're saying, "I know my heart's not right. I know my heart is actually quite black." And I bet when you thought about the things, the essential things that you'd like to tell everybody, you didn't think about all the bad things that you know go on in your heart. Because all of us, there's not a single one of us that would be prepared to stand up and say exactly what goes on in our hearts, and it wouldn't be right for us to do so. But God sees. The good news, of course, is that Jesus came to deal with that. Jesus, as we've been singing, as we've been praying, has the power to change our hearts. Our hearts may be inclined to evil, but Jesus has won for us a salvation that has power over even the inclination of our own hearts. If you don't know that power, then speak to somebody. Speak to somebody that you trust. Speak to somebody, speak to me if you like, or anybody that you know in within the church who can help you with that. Jeremiah 17 verse 10. This is another quite solemn thing, really. That it says here, again, this is God speaking. I, the Lord, search the heart. Now, sometimes we're aware of that searching, because sometimes we do, I suppose there's lots of applications for that. I was going to say sometimes we feel uncomfortable, what the Bible calls conviction, about something. And that's the result of the Spirit moving within us, saying that's not right. And we usually have to do something about that, go and see somebody or do something to put that right. Once we've identified that, done the thing that's necessary, then we begin to move on. But the truth of it, as I see it, is that the Lord is always searching our hearts, whether we're aware of it or not. And most of the time, the truth is that we're not. But God is always searching, always testing, always looking inside each one of us to see what is there. Which means that it's important that we do, that whatever we do is done to God at whenever we are, and not just on a Sunday morning when we're in church. Because God is constantly searching that essential being that we call ourselves to see where the motivations are coming from. And another verse from Psalm 26, verse 2. This is the psalmist speaking this time, but it's interesting what he says. And I'm going to read it from the King James Bible because I love this particular turn of phrase. He says, "Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart." When the King James Bible was written, of course, 11, I think, or don't quote me on that, everybody got around on horseback. So the idea of trying somebody's reins comes from that. It's perfectly normal when that book was, when that particular edition of the Bible was translated and written. So everybody knew straight away that when you pull on a rein, you pull, pull both reins to stop a horse, right? And you pull one rein to point its head in a different direction. And if a horse is well trained, it would just do it. But imagine if it was you. Imagine if you'd got a bit in your mouth and somebody else was yanking on some reins behind you to tell you where to go or where not to go. How would you react to that? You'd probably turn around and swipe them or something, because you wouldn't like to be yanked about. But this presumably is what the psalmist is saying for God to be able to do. God, pull my rein, point me in the direction that I should be going in, or tell me to stop and I'll do it. Or will I? Try it and see. It's basically what the psalmist is saying. Test my heart. Because the reaction that you get, Lord, will come from my essential being. And that's one of the other things that the Bible teaches, I suppose, that the heart forms the focal point of God's dealings with us. That when God speaks to us, he speaks in lots of ways, admittedly, but he speaks right into the depth of our being. And we're moved by what he says and how he directs. And that means that we can, hopefully, if like the psalmist, we're asking God to to try our reins to point us in the right direction. When we turn towards God, we do it with our hearts. But the opposite is also true. When we turn away from God, we can turn away with our hearts. And that's a very serious thing. For me, it shows the difference between having doubts, having a crisis of faith almost. You can do that. You're allowed to do that. In fact, sometimes that's really good for us because it challenges us where we are. It moves us from maybe a position of comfort into a new revelation of God. And we're allowed to do that because our hearts, somehow deep down, the essential me is still longing for God, even in the struggle of a test of faith. So that's the reason why nobody should be frightened of those things. Nobody should be frightened of doubt. Nobody should be frightened of testing faith and trying. Because as long as your heart is still pointed towards God, God knows your heart. It's when we turn our hearts away from God that something is going seriously wrong. And a very famous verse from Isaiah 29, verse 13, which you'll recognise, I'm sure, when I read it. These people come near me, this is God speaking, these people come near me with their mouth and honour me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Again, what a sentence. And I don't know about you, but I can only speak for myself, but sometimes I do feel a bit like that. It's easy to say the right things, it's easy to do the right things, but sometimes my heart's not in it, as we would say. God was talking about a very serious turning away from him, and of course there was a punishment for that, for the people of Israel. And actually, even as you think in history, when people have turned their hearts, essential hearts, away from God, it gets replaced by something else, which is not good. And so often that ends in destruction. God's never fooled. You can fool other people to a point, but you can never fool God about the state of your heart. The New Testament particularly talks about the spiritual state of our heart determines the state of every other aspect of who we are and what we do and what we say, as I've already sort of begun to talk about. And I guess that's where our reading comes in. I'm going to read it again, simply because it's short and it'll just serve to remind us of that reading. Although I really enjoyed the way that John read that. Thank you, John. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. That reading kind of is one of the things that we base this idea of the centre of who we are, as it radiates out and reveals itself in what we do and say, which is the fruit that it's talking about, that it reveals what's going on deep inside, which is uncomfortable, really, isn't it, often for us, because we do like to put up a mask. We do like to present a certain persona. But this essentially says you can't do that, or at least you can't do that over any period of time. Is Jesus saying that there are good hearts and bad hearts, and it's as simple as that? Well, in a sense, that's what it is. Jesus is so black and white sometimes, and says some stuff simply to, not to shock us, although sometimes it does shock us, but to say, this is quite straightforward, this is quite simple. But at the same time, I don't think he's just simply saying that. I would say that he's saying good deeds, the fruit, comes from a good character which is drawn from a good heart. Maybe he's saying that godly deeds come from godly character, which is drawn from a heart that's been renewed by the Holy Spirit. And interestingly, you can't do that the other way around, which is why I'm always a bit suspicious of New Year's resolutions, when you can take them too far. There are some good things that you can do. I'm going to put the bin out on Tuesday night instead of Wednesday morning when it's sometimes too late. That's fine. Do it. But you can't change who you are by changing your essential, by changing outward actions. You can try, you'll fail. You change who you are by changing, allowing God to change your essential character, your heart. And how does that happen? Well, in many ways, but I think it happens, or at least I've written here, that good or godly deeds and hearts happen because of good teaching, good habits, and primarily obedience to God. So what we're saying is that there's no hiding at the end of the day. And if we try and hide who we are, particularly from our Christian brothers and sisters, we're doing ourselves and them a disservice. And I guess this is really what I've come to say this morning amongst some of the other things. People pick fruit. They pick fruit. If you go out into the garden in middle of June, you see a lovely strawberry bush with gorgeous red, shiny fruit on it. Well, I can't resist this. I'll just pick it and eat it. I won't even get inside to wash it. Don't tell my wife. You don't just leave it to admire it. You want to pick it. And it's the same with each and every one of us. Even as we come in today and as we chat afterwards, if we're staying, and once this horrible COVID thing is out, we get the chance to really come together again. That's what we do. If we're truly allowing ourselves to be a part of who we are, that's what we do. We pick fruit from the essential me inside. And I suppose loving God with all our hearts is evidenced by what we do or say. If we truly love God, then what other people will pick will demonstrate that. The last thing I want to say, time is gone, and that is that this place, this church, and by that I mean the building, it's a church building because it houses the church, of course. But I really believe that this place should be, particularly on a Sunday, not always, but particularly this place, this particular gathering should be a time for heart surgery, for heart struggle, for heart conviction. A safe place where people can present themselves before God and each other and be who they genuinely are. A place where they can be open to being changed by the love of Jesus, by the power of the Holy Spirit. That's where we should be. And if that's not where we are, I think we're missing out. Let's ask God to lead us. If we don't feel we're in that place, let's ask God to lead us into that place more and more as we seek to honour him, to be drawn by him into whatever he has for us this year. Let's let's turn our hearts towards God. Going to continue our worship. Pete's going to lead us once again in a hymn of worship. When I survey the wondrous cross, shall we stand to sing?